Hey everyone, I'm Diego, and I'm joined by our new podcast team member, Val.
Hey everyone, I'm Val. I'm a second year student studying QAMO with a marketing emphasis. I recently just joined YouCareer Success on the marketing podcast team, and I'm so excited to be here. If you missed part one, be sure to check it out for insights into the finance industry and careers in finance.
In part two of our conversation with financial professionals Jen Swindler and Brennan Bowen, we dive deeper into personal finance. Personal finance is the management of your own money and financial decisions. It can involve budgeting, saving, investing, and planning for future financial goals to achieve stability and well-being.
Welcome back to Hey You.
So Jen and Brennan, shifting from our last conversation, what advice do you have for students looking to get into personal finance and investing?
I think one of the things is getting in the habit of being consistent in checking in with your money. And so that might be cash flow, that might be your savings, goals, or anything, really any element of your financial situation. But it's something where it's really clear to people, I guess when we look at our physical health, that we need to exercise and eat healthy if we want to be healthy in general. It's something that we have to be consistent with. And with financial planning, I think people struggle to apply that same consistency to get financially healthy, but it's really necessary to have. I mean, for most of my clients, I usually recommend putting a date on the calendar at least twice a month where you check in on your spending and your savings goals and those kinds of things. So a lot of people, it's just trying to get in the habit of being consistent and looking at the picture of your whole situation and not avoiding things, even if it's not necessarily pleasant to look at sometimes.
I'd say the first thing you need to do is grab $50, go to fidelity.com, open up a stock trading account. It is not hard to do. You can do it in like 3 minutes. Just go to fidelity.com. There is open an account link. It'll say individual account. You can open it and you can just go start looking up companies. I think my first penny stock was Skull Candy. It was when they were still on the stock market, and then their owner came back when their stock tanked and bought them back. You will see the behavioral side of finance, which is really the side of finance that I absolutely love. And you will be able to feel it and relate to people in their 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s kind of deal, because you're gonna watch your stock go way high, way low, way high, way low, and it is an emotional roller coaster. And that is what my clients go through, some on a daily basis, unfortunately. And it's because they won't stop looking at the stock market, right? They don't look at their investments as long-term because we have so much information being passed nonstop. But that, I invested in multiple penny stocks, and that helped me a ton. You know, I had a 65-year-old guy, and he was invested, it was probably like 75% of his million-dollar portfolio was in one stock. And he was just calling me all the time. And I finally just had to sit down with him and say, look, I can understand what you're going through. And I shared my experience. Now, I didn't share with him the dollar amounts that I had in it versus his dollar amounts, right? Because I think my worst penny stock, I watched it go up by 10 times and I thought, oh my gosh, it's gonna go to a dollar a share. And if it's a dollar a share, I just turned $200 into $150,000. I'm gonna be a genius, right? And it ended up going up by 10 times and then dropping by 100 times. So my $200 turned into like 20 cents or something. I don't know if that's the exact, you know, amounts that it dropped, but it was, I just remember this like, oh, it's doing awesome. And then, oh, are you kidding? I should have sold out at $2,000 sort of deal. And so I was able to use that story and convince the client to get out of it. And luckily he did it at the right time. And he was super happy because the stock dropped in half. I've got another, it's actually a whole family of clients. They had $100 million. So probably 75% again, maybe 60% of their overall value between the 10 family members was in that one stock. And if you guys are familiar with Silicon Valley Bank, it just got destroyed. Luckily, it wasn't that stock they were in, but it was another bank stock, and that correlated to Silicon Valley Bank. A lot of other bank stocks have just plummeted. And I'd been telling them for probably 3 or 4 years, along with my partner, we need to sell. We need to sell more. We need to sell. We need to sell. I just didn't want to. And now they're saying, as soon as it comes back, I'm going to sell. Right? So having that experience, you don't have to have millions of dollars to have that experience and to be able to relate to people. And I would say you've got to have that kind of thing if you're going to go into personal finance and be someone's advisor.
What are some common myths and misconceptions about personal finance or investing in general that you would like to debunk?
I think the idea that money is shameful or something that's not appropriate to discuss, where, like, I grew up in a household that was definitely that way, where it was, we don't talk about what money people make, we don't talk about how much things cost, we don't ever really delve into any of that stuff. And I think there's just more and more evidence coming out now showing how advantageous it is to have open conversations with money, and the research on shame that shows that when we talk about things we're ashamed of, it helps that shame to diminish. And so I think for a lot of people, like, they might be in debt, or maybe they just don't earn as much as they want to, or they just don't understand their situation. And if they feel ashamed and they're kind of keeping that in, they're often more likely to make poor decisions. Where if you can talk about it, it's often the first step in getting yourself on the path you ultimately want to be on. Yeah, so I think just having that those really open conversations with friends and family and getting to a point where we can talk about it more as a society, I think it's really necessary. And there's evidence that for women, that having those conversations can help decrease wage gaps and make it so that you have this clarity of what other people are making. And so I think a lot of the future equality that we're going to see with money is going to come from talking about money more.
Get rich quick schemes. Social media is full of them. There is no get rich quick. It takes a ton of work. I don't care if you invested in Bitcoin. If you hit it right and became a 100 millionaire off of Bitcoin, it was because you did a ton of research into how to buy that Bitcoin and what Bitcoin was and all that. You see all these people that, oh yeah, I bought this. And yes, they did have that moment of serendipity where they invested correctly and it just blew up for them. They put in work for it, right? They didn't just all of a sudden snap their fingers and had so much money. I get so many phone calls and text messages of, oh, have you seen this? One of the latest ones going around right now is, if you max out a Roth IRA for your child and you leave it in there until they're 65, do you realize that your child will retire a millionaire? It's like, well, yeah, sure. Does everybody have $7,500 a year to put into a Roth IRA for their child? And does everybody also putting in enough for their own retirement too? You know, and just things like that, I'll get people calling me about it. And ultimately what I would say is everything that you research, you need to see where the money flows. That person is trying to sell that get rich quick thing because they get so many likes or hearts or whatever you want to call it. And then they become popular and then they can start selling ads and get revenue from those ads. That's why they're saying extreme things. Same thing, you'll see these articles of the S&P 500 is gonna fall another 50% this year. And I'll get clients that constantly ask me, oh my gosh, what are we doing to stop that? And I'll say, well, send me the article. 99% of the time, that article has this headline that is just scary. It's freaky to think of, oh, I've got $500,000 or I've got $10 million invested and it's going to fall by 50%. You have to wonder, though, how are they getting paid? When you click on the article, and then hopefully you're going to look at the ads on the side and click on one of the ads and then buy something. And guess what? They get revenue because someone clicked on their ad that was next to their article. And so all they're trying to do is bring you in to click on it. Usually the story's halfway in between, right? You can't get rich quick. If something's really scaring you that bad, you really need to take it with a grain of salt, a huge grain of salt, because it's most likely not that.
So you both mentioned the importance of saving long term. What exactly should students do now to get started?
I don't care if you're not making any money, you can afford to save $50, bum it off your parents, and you need to put it into, most likely, not every time, but most likely, you need to put it into a Roth IRA. And if you want a simple fund to invest in, this is not investment advice, but just something you can look at, like an S&P 500. Leave it and forget it. Don't do anything with it right now. There is no need. That will grow for you tax-free, and you can afford $50 a month, I promise you. Once again, bum it off your parents, your grandparents. Just put it away. You will thank yourself. You will give yourself a huge hug later on, especially in a Roth IRA, because there's far more than just retirement you can do with that money. So that, as far as saving for retirement, start now.
And lastly, do you have any recommended resources for students?
Yeah, there's a book that I think anybody, even if you're not necessarily headed towards personal financial planning, there's a book called Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And that book, it really goes through the common ways that people think about money, and it really helps people to understand, I think, the way that they feel about money and understanding the emotional side of things better. So that book is definitely a top one. That's one I recommend to clients a lot too. And then subscribing, there's, if you've heard of Morning Brew, the newsletter, they have the Money Scoop segment of their newsletter that gives a lot of current events and kind of talks about more the money side specifically. I think that's a really nice thing to subscribe to and kind of help remind yourself about it on a regular basis. And then actually through Morning Brew as well, there is a woman who does a podcast called Money with Katie, and her podcast is really good. She explains a lot of good financial topics and distills them down in a really simple and entertaining way. So I think that's a really good one. And then one of the other things I think is really worth doing for a lot of people, there's a financial psychologist named Brad Klontz, and he has it's like an assessment quiz, kind of money profile quiz, and on his site you can go take that assessment, and it tells you your scores in these different categories and then what that might mean for you, what you might see your behaviors be towards your money. And I think those things are really helpful in just understanding yourself and understanding your tendencies towards money. And that assessment is one that I send to my clients early on, and so I can understand how they think about money. And then I've also recommended that to family, and I feel like that assessment has been a really good way to have conversations.
Thank you again so much, Brennan and Jen, for joining us today on part 2 of this finance series. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us a like, follow, and share it with your friends. Once again, I'm Val.
And I'm Diego.
And this has been
Hey You!